Welcome to a very special edition of Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we had the pleasure of speaking with Maria Victoria Mateos, MD, PhD, Associate Professor of Hematology and Director of the Myeloma Unit at the University Hospital of Salamanca, to discuss the FDA approval of the subcutaneous daratumumab formulation in multiple myeloma. On May 1, 2020, the FDA approved daratumumab and hyaluronidase FIHJ for adult patients with newly diagnosed or relapsed refractory multiple myeloma. This new product allows for subcutaneous dosing of daratumumab. The approval is based on findings from the Phase 3 COLUMBA study, which demonstrated non-inferiority in terms of efficacy compared with the intravenous formulation of the CD38 targeted monoclonal antibody. Results showed that the objective response rate was 41.1% with subcutaneous daratumumab versus 37.1% with the IV formulation, thus meeting the criteria for non-inferiority. The median duration per infusion dropped from more than 3 hours per infusion in the IV arm to 5 minutes with the subcutaneous version. Moreover, the subcutaneous version led to a reduction in treatment burden when compared with the standard version. Regarding safety in the COLUMBA trial, significantly fewer infusion-related reactions were observed in patients who received the subcutaneous formulation versus those who received the IV formulation. The median time to onset of IRR was 1.5 hours in the IV group versus 3.6 hours for the subcutaneous arm. The safety profile was similar between the formulations. The rate of grade 3 or 4 neutropenia was higher in the subcutaneous group compared with the IV group at 13% versus 8% respectively. The rates of any grade chills and dyspnea were lower in the subcutaneous group versus the IV group, likely due to a reduction in IRRs. The approval is also supported by results from the ongoing Phase 2 Pleiades trial, in which adult patients with newly diagnosed multiple myeloma received subcutaneous daratumumab in combination with either bortezomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone, or bortezomib, melphalan, and prednisone. Patients with relapsed refractory disease received subcutaneous daratumumab plus lenalidomide and dexamethasone. Results show that the ORR in the DVMP cohort was 88.1%. The ORR was 90.8% for the DRD arm and 97% for the DVRD arm. According to the FDA, the recommended dose of daratumumab and hyaluronidase FIHJ is 1,800 mg of daratumumab and 30,000 units of hyaluronidase administered subcutaneously into the abdomen over approximately 3 to 5 minutes, according to the recommended schedule. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Mateos discussed the data that led to the approval of the subcutaneous daratumumab formulation and the clinical implications of the regulatory decision.
Could you start by kind of providing some background on daratumumab in general and where it was approved prior to this approval coming into the spotlight?
Daratumumab is an anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody. With a double mechanism of action, daratumumab targets CD38 expressed on the surface of the plasma cells, resulting into a direct antitumor activity. And this direct activity is responsible for the rapid responses we observe when we treat our patients with myeloma with daratumumab. And at the same time, daratumumab targets CD38 expressed on the surface of many immunosuppressive cells, resulting at the end into an immunomodulatory effect. And this immunomodulatory effect is responsible for the durability and depth of responses. Daratumumab was first approved as single agent for the management of relapsed and refractory myeloma patients at late advanced stage of the disease, and immediately it moved to earlier lines of therapy in combination with the different backbones, lenalidomide and dexamethasone, bortezomib and dexamethasone, and the next step was to introduce daratumumab as part of the first line of therapy in combination with the different backbones in the transplant-eligible and in the transplant-ineligible population. But daratumumab was administered since the beginning as an IV formulation, and the main issue daratumumab presented was the time of infusion, because it required approximately 7 hours for the first infusion, 3.5 hours for the second infusion, and approximately 3 hours since the third one, and so on. And well, in order to try to improve this time of infusion was the rationale for development of the subcutaneous formulation, that is this formulation that a subQ was the formulation that has been recently approved by FDA.
You kind of mentioned this, but why was the subcutaneous formulation an important novelty in this space, and why was it pursued as a therapeutic modality? I know that you mentioned the time for infusion rate was quite significant.
Yeah, so the administration of daratumumab, as I previously said, when it was administered in IV, the median infusion duration was quite long. And we know that with this background, I would say the unmet need for the management of daratumumab in the treatment of our patients with multiple myeloma would be to reduce the patient burden without compromising daratumumab safety and efficacy. And this was the rationale for developing the subcutaneous delivery mode of action. And in this case, daratumumab is combined with a human recombinant human hyaluronidase in order to deliver the subQ daratumumab. And this subQ formulation is going to increase the tissue permeability, is going to allow rapid administration of larger volumes of drug, and while it is possible to get high concentrations of daratumumab in a very low injections volume. Definitely this has been the rationale for developing daratumumab in a subQ formulation, with one additional important information. Dose is a flat dose, 1800 milligrams in 15 milliliters, and it's usually administered as subcutaneous injection in the abdomen in approximately 3-5 minutes injection time.
Then I want to move a little bit into the data that we've seen that kind of led to this approval. So could you start by talking about the data from the phase 3 COLUMBA trial for which the approval was based on?
The COLUMBA trial is the phase 3 randomized trial evaluated in relapsed and non-refractory myeloma patients after at least 3 prior lines of therapy. All patients had been previously exposed to proteasome inhibitor, or in some cases, double refractory to proteasome inhibitors and IMiD. And basically, this was the population included in the first studies conducted with daratumumab when it was delivered as an IV infusion. And in this phase 3 randomized trial, this population was randomized 1-to-1 to receive daratumumab subcutaneous or daratumumab intravenously. The scheme of administration was equivalent in both arms. Daratumumab was given once per week during cycles 1 and 2, every 15 days on cycles 3 to 6, and monthly since the cycle number 7. The dose was 16 milligrams per kilo in the IV arm, and the subQ arm received a flat dose, 1800 milligrams. And the co-primary endpoints for this study was overall response rate and maximum concentration throughout the beginning of the cycle 3, because an important consideration is that this phase 3 randomized trial was a non-inferiority study to demonstrate that data subQ was not inferior to data IV in terms of overall response rate and PK studies, with key secondary endpoints like infusion-related reaction rate, progression-free survival, overall survival, patient report outcomes, and so on. The rationale for the Columba study was the PAVO study, that it was a phase 1b open label multicenter dose finding proof of concept study in order to show if that sub-Q was safe, effective, but especially to find the appropriate dose to be delivered in a sub-Q way. And in this PAVO study, systemic absorption with data sub-Q was slower than with IV, but it was also observed how the maximum concentration through for 1800 milligrams sub-Q was comparable to 16 milligrams per kilo IV. And the clinical response rates were similar to IV, around 30%. Safety point of view, in this PAVO study, it was already showed how the infusion-related reactions were significantly lower than with the IV. But definitely this study was not a randomized study. This was just a phase 1b study. And this was the rationale for moving to the Columba study, the phase 3 randomized trial, in order to demonstrate that data sub-Q was not inferior to data IV.
Regarding safety, are there any differences regarding the toxicities associated with the sub-Q formula versus the standard version?
Data sub-Q resulted much more safe than data IV, and especially because infusion-related reactions is probably the most relevant data-related adverse event. With the data IV, we know that approximately 35 up to 40% of the patients can develop any kind of infusion-related reactions. And in the Columba study, we had the opportunity to see how the infusion-related reactions in the sub-Q arm was only 13%. So this difference is great because it was statistically significant. It's true that the infusion-related reactions in both arms were basically grade 1 and 2, and really I think that there were just a few patients developing grade 3 infusion-related reactions, and there was not any patient with grade 4 infusion-related reactions. There is an important difference in the median time to infusion-related reactions because for data IV, this median time was approximately 1.5 hours, whilst for the simulation is a bit longer, approximately 3.6 hours. But important to note that the infusion-related reactions basically occurred in both arms after the first infusion. This message is important because it results into an important clinical implication. After the first data administration via subcutaneous, can stay around the hospital, around the facility for approximately 2 or 3 hours in order to see if the patient potentially develops any infusion-related reactions. But this is only applicable to the first infusion, and if there is not any infusion-related reaction, the patient can immediately leave after the sub-Q administration since the second infusion. Concerning other toxicity, hematological or non-hematological toxicity, safety profile was comparable in both arms. And just to note that as the infusion-related reactions were lower with the sub-Q, some adverse events like chills or dyspnea were significantly lower in the data sub-Q. And also to note from the hematological point of view, the incidence of neutropenia was just slightly higher in the data sub-Q. But overall, I would say that the safety profile was similar between data sub-Q and data IV.
Are there any factors that could determine whether a patient should receive the subcutaneous formulation or the standard form, or is it, you know, are we going to be pretty much moving toward the subcutaneous administration of this drug?
I think that data sub-Q is definitely much more convenient for the patients. Is much more convenient also for the hospitals because the sub-Q administration is going to save resources and at time the patients have to stay in the outpatient facilities. And I think that every patient with multiple myeloma candidate to receive daratumumab can potentially receive a data sub-Q. It's true that the Columbine study evaluated data single agent, but the important information is that Janssen conducted an ancillary study, the Pleiades study, in which data sub-Q has been combined with different backbones, lenalidomide and dexamethasone in the relapse setting, bortezomib, melphalan, and prednisone in the afferent setting, as well as bortezomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone in the afferent setting. And the main objective of this Pleiades study has been to demonstrate that data sub-Q in combination with these different backbones in the afferent setting or in the relapse setting resulted in similar overall response rate, complete response rate, progression-free survival, and safety profile than these combinations when these combinations were combined with data IV. So from my point of view, I think that data sub-Q can be utilized as single agent or can be utilized also in combination with the different backbones.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add, or is there any challenges that we have with the subcutaneous formulation that we didn't already touch on?
I think that the data sub-Q administration has not any potential issue and any potential challenge, because maybe if I have to remark a specific population is patients with a extremely low body weight, because as I previously said, data sub-Q has to be delivered in a flat dose, 1800 milligrams. But a sub-analysis was conducted in order to demonstrate that both overall response rate as well as the maximum concentration through at the beginning of the cycle 3, but also the safety profile was comparable across the different subgroup of patients on the basis of different body weight. And well, for me, this would be the only challenging situation that we can potentially face. And my message would be that 1800 milligrams as flat dose can be delivered to whatever patient with multiple myeloma, regardless of the body weight. And if I can add another important comment about the Columba study is the patient report outcomes, because patients completed a modified cancer treatment satisfaction questionnaire, and it clearly resulted in a significant benefit for the data sub-Q arm. And basically, data sub-Q patients were more satisfied with their cancer therapy than data IV patients. And this resulted into a significant difference between data IV and data sub-Q. So data sub-Q is much more convenient for patients, is much more convenient for physicians, for hospitals, for pharmacies, for nurses. But when you ask to the patient, you are able to report the satisfaction patient reported when they received data sub-Q. And I think that this is extremely important.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this special episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for recaps from our State of the Science summits and exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Onc Live is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Onc Live and Onc Live SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Onc Live and Onc Live State of the Science Summit, and follow our Onc Live page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Onc Live On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.